Kamenetsky Brothers Land of Lakers podcast. Brian Kamenetsky, Andy Kamenetsky coming to you Tuesday afternoon. Plenty to talk about, Andy. This weekend it all starts. Media Day, Saturday in El Segundo. We're ready to go. Kobe won't be playing in the preseason, thank God.
Nor will he be playing, by the way, during Media Day.
Right. Well, no one will. There are no games
during
Media Day. That's
my point. But if anybody is concerned that Kobe is not available to suit up for Media Day, don't worry about it.
There.
He never does.
He will be there. And so a lot, we'll be out there. And we'll have some more stuff to talk about. Mitch Kupchak talking this week as well. But the big news this week, of course, and we'll get to it, is the Jeannie Buss book excerpt that was published by the Los Angeles Times.
The addendum to the already published Laker Girl, co-written with Steve Springer.
Right. It's an interesting point to note. The book already exists.
Right. This is not a new book. This is an added chapter.
Because last year was kind of goofy.
Yeah.
Let's write about it. We've got ACK coming up later in the show. All of that coming up after this week's headlines. All right, Andy, we've seen alternate uniforms, Latino heritage uniforms, uniform redesigns, retro uniforms, and uniforms with sleeves.
Yeah.
I'm not a big fan.
Those are the worst.
Uniforms with sleeves exist only because white people are uncomfortable. Really, it's white. It's pasty white people. It's fat people of all race and creed, but really white people because they're pasty and tend to be kind of hairy. We don't like wearing the tank tops. It's uncomfortable. We have to wear a t-shirt.
This feels like a confessional, Brian, the way you're talking right now.
A little bit more than
and
I would.
And by
like.
Little chubby,
don't have the body for it. Yeah, I understand these things. And we end up having to wear a t-shirt
and when
under
we're
it anyway.
Picked last already, right. the worst thing is to be wearing sleeves.
We already know that it's a bad look to wear a t-shirt under these things. You just don't look as cool.
But a worse look is a sleeve jersey. Unless you're going to play soccer, in which case it's a great look.
Well,
they
anyway.
Look like soccer jerseys.
And the Lakers will be wearing those this year, much to everyone's chagrin. But now, Andy, we might see nickname uniforms. Members of the Brooklyn Nets and Miami Heat could be playing games this year with their nicknames on their back instead of their birth names. King James, for example, instead of just regular James, Shuttlesworth instead of Allen, and so forth. Your thoughts?
I think it's kind of fun. I mean, it's an obvious money grab, just like all of the throwback jerseys you've talked about.
Everything else on that list. Right.
You know, Latino heritage, which, you know, it's a nice nod to a fan base, but let's be honest, you're trying to peddle some Los Lakers, Los Spurs, Los Suns, and the like
which
jerseys.
Which, again, all it just means... The Spurs.
Right.
They don't put in it. That's not what the jersey. The only reason they have to do it that way is because otherwise you wouldn't know that those are the Latino heritage jerseys.
Here's the thing, though.
It's a little pandering, I have to say.
You're trying to pander to two audiences. You're trying to pander to an audience, the Latino Spanish-speaking audience that frankly has grown, and you want to try to include them more.
Right, but shouldn't the nickname then be in Spanish?
No.
Just put the Spanish name on there,
It should be, but the problem is you may not be able to sell those to as many gringos who don't quite understand, say...
You would. Here's how you combine them. You put sleeves on the Latino heritage jerseys, and then everybody's happy.
But anyway, we've seen a bunch of different money grab opportunities, like the sleeves you mentioned, and this is one of them. But this is at least kind of
fun.
I wouldn't want it all the time, but it's fun.
No,
I mean, I'm hoping, though, since, you know, the Heat are involved, that Chris Bosh goes with either Bostrich or puts a Leica in front of Bosh.
That would be cool.
That would be a lot of fun. Or I'm hoping, too, since Udonis Haslam is a member of the Heat, instead of UD, which I believe he's referred to a lot, that he goes by Luca Brasi, or he just has Brasi on the end. That was the nickname that Shaq gave him when they were members of that first championship Heat team. With the Nets, is Fropez going to be an option for Brook Lopez?
Yeah, but there is an. I would, again, you wouldn't want it every day, but once a year you get some fun stuff going on with your team and stuff. I have no problem.
Pekovic has got to go none
if he can. This gets into something there because Shane Battier wanted to be Batman by the reports, and apparently you're not allowed to use trademarked things. So non, if people make the connection. Might be off limits.
No, he would just say, look, people say no to me a lot. Right. they say that
is
I negate things a lot.
Is there an alternate definition for non? But anyway, so yeah, I got no problem with it.
Speaking of, Brian, new uniforms, the Lakers.
And money grabs.
And money grabs. The Lakers have unveiled the new black Hollywood Knights uniforms. We don't know yet which games, to the best of my knowledge.
Later in the year, sometime after Christmas.
They're going to be unveiled. They're black uniforms with purple trim. They are also known, beyond just being a money grab, as a celebratory nod towards the Hollywood industry and specifically, you know, the people who do the behind-the-scenes work, the gaffers, the PAs, all the people who can't ever pay to get inside the building to watch people wear Hollywood Nights
jerseys. This is for you! But mostly it's a money grab.
But, kind of like the nickname jerseys, I think they look pretty badass. I like them.
I am not a jersey. I'm a, as you like to point out, a sort of a jersey fashionista. I think it's important to dress well when you're on the court. Teams with ugly uniforms tend not to win stuff. But I'm not a uniform purist. I think it's fine with certain exceptions. You shouldn't mess with like the St. Louis Cardinals where we grew up because A, the uniform's great looking as it is. You don't need alternate uniforms because they tend to look worse than the ones that are the Yankees don't need alternate uniforms.
Yeah, as much as I hate the Yankees, right. I wouldn't mess with that
stuff
uniform
like that. Yeah, you know, there's a limit. But generally speaking, I like the Lakers' home white jerseys, frankly, more than their yellow ones. That yellow's a little dated. It's a little dated.
I don't agree. Kind it's a classic. Bad. It's only dated when people don't still appreciate it anymore, and there's still plenty of fans.
Would
of
you
the
agree
gold.
That the logo is starting to get a little dated?
A little bit. I shudder though to think what the new one would be.
Right, don't mess with it. I'm just saying
Lakers with a Z at the end.
Yo, but yeah, I have no. And they're cool looking. They are. I like black and purple is a cool combination.
It
the
is
yellow,
very,
the gold outlining really pops. It's a
it
good
is
looking
very
uniform.
Difficult to mess up a black uniform. I'm not saying it can't be done, but generally speaking, mm-hmm. Brian, it is damn hard to mess with black. Black is eye catching. It's vaguely sinister. You know. Darth Vader, Johnny Cash, Batman, now the Hollywood Knights Lakers. They look like a crew not to be trifled with.
According to multiple sources, Indiana's Paul George and Sacramento's DeMarcus Cousins are both nearing contract extensions. George is reportedly in the neighborhood of 5 years, $90 million. Andy, I don't care how from Palmdale a guy might be. Nobody is turning down that sort of money.
Well, it's an
especially coming from one of the best young teams in the NBA, a team that I think is going to the finals.
It has
this year.
Not. It has not been verified yet. Though.
He hasn't signed it.
Well, no, but I was going to say it's not been verified yet that this is not an extend and trade, right? They're lining
right.
up Paul George.
The Lakers are dangling Pau Gasol.
Exactly.
Or something.
They are setting up to extend and trade Paul George because he was going to the Lakers, right?
He's from Palmdale.
He was one of the free agents. You can't turn down the Lakers. It's L.A.
There
was no chance in hell he was ever going anywhere other than the Pacers, which we said many times on this very show.
It's just a reminder that, A, the free agency train is not going to include, you know, John Wall, who was on the list before, and now he's extended, and Paul George and DeMarcus Cousins and all these
Cousins,
great...
though, I actually thought there might have been
only
a chance.
Right, only because he's such a knucklehead that
right.
he might have done something
right.
stupid
but,
enough.
But... there was a chance. I actually thought he was somebody that you could like look at and say, "There's an outside
Samsonite."
Chance. Exactly,
and that's fine. But you know those the, you know, Kyrie
as
Irving,
opposed to Paul George,
right, Kyrie which, Irving is not coming.
No,
limit yourself when you think of these great young, you know, the great foundational free agents the Lakers might go after to the older set, or people that could opt out, like LeBron, who's still in his prime, or someone like that. It's not going to be these 22-year-old, 23-year-old, 24-year-old guys that you can build around for a decade. Not going to happen.
Well, unless it's somebody like, maybe not that young, but I was saying somebody like Rondo, who may become disenchanted with the direction of the Celtics
sure.
in 2015, could be available. Or Kevin Love maybe decides, I've had it with the amount of tries that the T-Wolves have given it. It's not going to work.
But this summer, for the
right.
grand free agent summer
right.
of 2014.
But as you and I have talked about a lot, and this is something I've really stressed a lot, you need to be thinking beyond 2014, whether you're a fan or especially the actual franchise. It would be the worst thing in the world if the Lakers tried to use up all that cap space at once because they want to make a big splash.
Next story.
That would be a belly flop. Finally, Brian, Shaquille O'Neal, once the adversary of the Sacramento Kings, is now a minority owner of said Sacramento Kings.
That's true. Long relationship reportedly with Sacramento, one of the partners with Vivek Renadive, the new owner, Mark Mastrov, who I believe is the mattress guy.
Is he
24 hours?
He's 24 hours.
Is he the mattress guy?
I don't know.
Either way, he's really rich.
I was going to say, if he's one, like the 24-hour fitness guy, he can afford a really bitchin' bed, so it doesn't really matter which one
yeah.
he is.
So either way, like you say, he's part of that group now. And the irony is really, I think, what's going to stick out to be the idea that a former player now is going to be an owner. I mean, these guys have made so much money over the course of their careers that they all have the ability. And Kobe, if he wants to be a part owner of the Lakers or any other team when he's done, can do it. A lot, you're going to see a lot more former players doing this kind of thing coming out of the NBA because they've made so much flipping money. But it's just the irony.
I actually think he'll be very good at this.
Yeah, I mean, he's like Magic. I mean, he's like Magic Johnson. It doesn't matter if he's the guy who really has all the money involved. I mean, Magic doesn't have, the biggest chunk of money involved in the Dodgers, but he's a great front man for the organization. Shaq is exactly the same way. He's big personality, very gregarious. The players like him.
They're going to get him into Marcus's ear right away.
Good recruiter for people to come to that city and all that kind of stuff. So it's a good move. It's a good move for Shaq.
It's all, I think, part of his master plan to prevent Dwight Howard from becoming the signature big man in the league. He's trying to train DeMarcus specifically to take Dwight out. He does not want that to happen.
All right, Andy. So those are your big headlines, big stories. Locally, of course, we mentioned it at the top, the Genie Bus book excerpt that was put out by the Los Angeles Times.
The addendum to Laker Girl.
Right. In which Jeannie pointed out, she described the whole hiring of Mike D'Antoni over Phil Jackson, which, as a reminder, was controversial at the time and remains so.
It also raised eyebrows because she quite literally took us, the readers, inside the bedroom of her and Phil Jackson.
I know.
It literally, she sets the stage about hearing that Mike D'Antoni and not Phil Jackson was hired as the new Laker coach. Scene, interior, bedroom.
I wonder what was on the cutting room floor, if you understand my meaning.
Probably nothing.
I don't think they got into that. Yeah. Phil and I had just finished a fabulous lovemaking session when the phone rang. He was as tender as he always is. I'm sorry, is that too much? Steve, do you need that for the book to work really well?
We broke our spooning to reach towards the gold-plated phone with the furry base. I looked up towards the mirror on our ceiling and saw that the phone was ringing.
My post-coital bliss shattered by the sound of the phone. Oh. Anyway.
I drank the last of the champagne that Phil and I had just poured ourselves and said, answer the phone, kitten.
Some of which went in the glass. Some of which went other places.
Yeah.
Steve, do you need this? I mean, really, this just seems salacious to me. I don't understand why you're asking for so much detail. Jeannie, who's the author here? Sorry, I don't mean to imply that was what Steve Springer
would
actually
do. Let's be very clear. That's not what was in the book.
That's not in the book. Well, we don't know. It's just an excerpt.
It's not what was in the book. We're guessing. And we apologize in advance to Jeannie and Phil.
And Steve Springer. But it's still funny. And that trumps everything. Anyway, Jeannie in real life says that she felt betrayed by the process, wondered whether or not Jim, who had come to her and said, do you think I could work with Phil and all that, ever really had any intention of hiring and all that.
According to Jeannie, this ball started rolling when Jim actually approached her and said, right, do you think Phil and I can actually work together? She said, I can't be a part of this decision. I want to stay out of it. He pressed her. She said, look, it can work. And that's what initiated the conversations between
I'll ask
Jim
him
and
when
Phil.
We're normally sexting the time we spend. I'll see if he's interested. But, this is one of those things where, because they went through we remember the Bucher article and all, it was a really wrenching time. This whole thing was botched from the beginning in terms of, I mean, talking about who they hired, the process was botched.
Yeah, Mitch Kupchak has admitted that they did not do as smooth a job as possible transitioning.
People generally defend Jeannie, especially when given the choice between choosing between the two of them. People generally defend Jeannie, but we're getting a lot of stuff in our Twitter feed, @CamBrothers, about whether or not this book and this chapter in this book really serves anything good in terms of the Lakers organization.
And the answer is it doesn't. This is a very ill-timed move by Jeannie that I think she is going to take and frankly deserves a fair amount of flack for because, you and I have discussed this before in a recent podcast, Brian, how I think that Jeannie, as much as I respect her as a person and as an executive, I think often has a very passive-aggressive approach to the way she deals with the relationship that's obviously strained between her and Jim, in that she knows she is always seen as on the side of good rather than evil, being Jim. And I think she milks it a lot. You know, she lets Phil do some of the talking for her and, you know, paint a worse picture of Jim.
But she keeps calling Jim Darth, which doesn't help.
But, you know, there's always been this perception that she's been the one that puts the franchise first, her feelings aside, because it's always about the organization. Whereas Jim Buss, whether you're talking about hiring Mike Brown, you know, as opposed to, say, Brian Shaw, part of the Phil Jackson family tree, or Mike D'Antoni, as opposed to Phil Jackson himself, that perception that was eventually proved wrong, that he would never trade Andrew Bynum because that was considered his Trump, you know, his Trump draft piece. There has always been that perception that Jim Buss put his feelings first and wanted to put that stamp first ahead of what was good for the organization.
Right. Show that he can do, show that he's a real personnel guy, and so on and so on.
And this addendum really flies in the face of that, because you have to question, with Jeannie doing this, because she knows when it's going to get published, what's the end game?
Well, it's just,
what's
know,
the point in
as
doing
a, as
this?
As a book, it's like, it's we all want to know what happened last year and all that, but it doesn't serve the organization
well
to tell anyone.
And it feels very self-serving, whether you're talking about Jeannie just venting, which I don't blame her for venting, but she certainly can vent behind closed doors as opposed to part of a book. Or, you know, as some people have wondered, is this part of her actually trying to undermine Jim and create a situation where Jim eventually gets forced out and she takes on a bigger responsibility within the organization? And whether that's true or not, it's very easy to question it because the timing is so self-serving.
It's not even so much the timing necessarily.
And the product is self-serving.
That's the big thing. The product, it's a book.
Right.
It's a book that she, you know, it's not like she's sharing the proceeds with Jim or the money goes into the Lakers' coffers. I mean, I guess it indirectly does. I mean, when Jeannie's richer, the Lakers are richer or whatever. But it doesn't make the organization wealthier. It's not like they take that book money and go out and sign
LeBron. In the meantime,
LeBron.
It could make the organization weaker, because all it does is continue to paint that picture that's been going back many, many years, when the two of them used to publicly snipe at each other, you know, especially during the radio tour with Kobe, that they cannot coexist.
And I am sympathetic in some ways, because I think people, and we've talked about this at length, I think people underestimate the difficulty of how this is. It's going to take a few years for this to really work. And you know what? And that's fair. Because I don't care what people say, they've been doing this forever. It's the same. It is so vastly different.
The game has changed.
We don't have to get back into the reason. If you don't get why, then you know you're the problem, not them. But in the meantime, Jim needs to talk publicly. Jim needs to get out there. Jeannie needs to be out there and encouraging fans. And there needs to be people need to be have confidence in the faith. But what they can't be doing is talking about what happens inside.
Right. And
what happens inside needs to stay there.
And I got to be honest, between the two of them, when it comes to the sibling that does more to publicly stoke the fires and that perception that they don't get along, it's Jeannie,
you're
not
right.
Jim.
No, you're right.
It's absolutely
and
Jeannie.
The other half of that, the perception that that creates, the other half that really creates that conflict, is the presence of Phil.
Right.
And the other thing that the Lakers need to do, and sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
Is they have to codify some sort of role for Phil. And somebody needs to stand up and say, yeah, you know what? We're going to bring Phil in and we're going to make him the Pat Riley guy and all these other things. I'll get to this in a second. I have reasons to think why that's not going to happen. But if they want to do it, then that's okay. Phil's going to be our Pat Riley. Is he good at it? Is he not good at it? We don't know. But that is a damn fine recruiting piece and a chip to have and say, yes, we have Phil Jackson, one of the great basketball minds of all time, in our organization. Not going to coach, and I don't think he will. Or Jim or Mitch or someone, preferably Jim, because if he just sends out Mitch, then it makes him look like a coward. Jim needs to stand up and say, you know what? We love Phil. He will always be part of the Laker family. He is always welcome in El Segundo. If he ever needs tickets, I can swing that for him.
At a discount.
Does he need a t-shirt? I mean, you know, whatever.
Would he like a Hollywood Knights jersey? And you know what you could do, since nicknames are allowed, you can put like P-Jacks.
P-Jacks, or just 11.
Oh yeah, 11,
what?
Rings,
whatever.
Zen Master.
You know what, Phil? Pick it. Pick it yourself.
Scarecrow.
We'll get that made up for you. But he's not
hippie.
He is not going to have a formal role in our organization beyond anything like, you know, Mitch calls him up to bend his ear because they're friends, whatever it is. He's not going to be in that. So stop. Everyone knows. That needs to happen. And because longer Phil kind of hangs over in this sort of will he, won't he thing where people go on TV and say, well, Phil, they could have Phil as a recruiter in 2014, 2015, whatever it is. You know, that's bad for the organization.
It needs to happen now. It is not fair.
By the end of this podcast.
No, I mean, whether you like him or don't like him, you want Mike D'Antoni to succeed. And it is not fair to keep him in this position where the specter of Phil Jackson is hanging over him. It's a bad look for the organization in terms of, again, that stability that they're trying to create the appearance of. It just needs to happen now.
Right.
Way or the other. And they need a definitive statement from Phil, if he's going to be a part of the organization, a definitive statement that he is no longer coaching, period.
Yeah, and I think that's the part that worries me the least. In the same way,
I mean, he's got to put it, because he's been through this process quite a few times. He's retired and unretired a few times. You know, even in 2011, he made it clear that he was leaning towards retirement.
I will take the mirrors off my ceiling if I ever coach again. That is how serious I am.
Yeah, because he loves them mirrors, if you know what we're saying. But, I mean, he needs to definitively spell out that he has no interest in ever coaching it again without any type of ambiguity whatsoever.
That's fine. And then that part, I think, that's the easiest part.
I'm just saying it needs to happen.
But that gets to it. I mean, here's why I don't think it's going to happen, why Jim would be smart just to say, look, guys, it's not going to happen. Take the bullet now, especially now, because it's a lousy – we're all preparing for, by Lakers standards, a lousy season anyway. Just get, you know, because it's not the only way that Phil comes back, in my opinion, Andy, is if basically Jim says, I'm going to step out of that role as player personnel guy and do more of what my father did, where you still have ultimate authority and you're still the guy ultimately signing the checks. But Jerry Buss didn't micromanage. He wasn't part of the day-to-day operation when Jerry West was working with Mitch Kupchak on who they're going to sign and not sign. He approves or doesn't approve. He might make. That's the kind of role that I think Jim would have to take. I would love to see that happen. I think that would be healthier for the organization, whether it's Phil that's in charge or anyone else, because I think that's a better setup. Signing the checks is a bad thing when you're also making the decisions on who gets them. We've talked about this. But I don't think that Jim will ever do that, especially to make room for Phil.
I have mixed feelings about whether it could work, whether it couldn't work, you know, how effective Phil would be. But there's a part of me that thinks that the organization would actually be better not taking him on in that role, just because I feel like there's got to be a point where they can move past Phil. And if they are really this paralyzed without having Phil be a part of the organization, if they really can't move forward and maintain the type of excellence that they've had, you know, for so many decades without Phil Jackson being involved, then that's a bigger problem than whether Phil is there or not, because there is a shelf life to how long he's going to be involved, even if they do bring him in.
Yeah,
they've got to figure out a way to function without Phil, if functioning without Phil is actually a problem.
I think
the truth is, last season, had it not been for, you know, a few very bad breaks, we might not even be having this discussion.
No, they hadn't screwed up the hire. They hadn't put it out there.
No, but I'm talking to just the Nash's injury going way longer. Everybody getting hurt.
Right, I see what you're
might
saying.
Not, you know, there That's was a true. Period where all That's of a sudden true. People were going, hey, you know, maybe the Apple
28-12. 28-12.
You know, around this time last year, everyone was saying, you know what, maybe the Apple didn't fall too far from the tree when it comes to Jim and Jerry. Then disaster hit and everyone questioned Jim.
Oh, no. Again, if you're somebody who's sitting there saying that you knew that. Last summer you thought Jim Buss was awesome.
But that's
my
point. That's my point.
But Jerry was still there.
Yep.
Some interesting notes that came out this week about Kobe's rehab. Most notably, Gary Vee says that Kobe has been very responsible generally in his rehab, that there was concern. He had concern that Kobe would be pushing too much and try to get back in a week and all these other things, you know, because he's being a little too Mamba-y. And Vee says that Kobe's been very smart about the whole process, with one exception.
He was not, Brian, showing restraint when it came to the much-viewed Vine video of him jumping off a high dive, I guess, to let people know this is how well he's progressing, although it's very vague since most Achilles rehabs have
I'm not sure really what one had to do with the other.
No high dive jumping stage. that's not A through Z.
He's off the alter G and he's on to the high dive. Right. Things are going well.
You and I both commented that, you know, there was an element of, okay, chill, Kobe. We get it. Your rehab's going great. There's no need to show off.
I think he's feeding the myth, Andy.
Right, exactly. And I totally agree with you that he's feeding the myth. And both of us were like, look, the myth is already in place. Everyone's bought in. We get it. Calm down. But I didn't actually think that there was any real danger of Kobe hurting himself. Like, you know, I just figured there's, even at that height, there's so little impact with water. Water gives. He'll be fine.
He hit pretty hard from 40 feet.
He checked this first with Gary Vee before jumping. He'd be fine. Gary Vee actually said, quote, "I wasn't real happy with it. I initially thought it was like when he jumped over the car," reference that Nike commercial with him and Roni Turioff and him jumping over the Aston Martin.
Right.
Which wasn't real.
Which was fake.
CGI. I'm going to say it again. Chill, Kobe. We know the Mamba's Steely rehab is going well. You don't need to work so hard to prove it. I had no idea he actually could have set himself back with that jump.
I guess he hit wrong and, you know, who knows.
Then in that case, it was idiotic.
It was stupid.
It turns out it was stupid.
One more thing before we get to ACK. Every year, ESPN puts this out. It's the future rankings, a power ranking style projection of franchise rankings over the next 3 years. They do it based, Andy, on things like players under contract, the quality of management, the market teams are in, their position in the draft, resources, cash.
How much the brothers and sisters within the organization fight.
That is a very specific. I think that may, in this case, fall under management. The Lakers, according to ESPN's projections, are 21st. On this. Now, we all know this year is not going to be a great one where they're not going to win a title, but even it might be next year, okay, maybe they can't rebuild it all in a year, but these guys are talking about the Lakers being 21st in this sort of future potential rankings.
Where basketball is played with hovercrafts.
Right, for another 3 years out.
Yeah.
This is where they're set up for 3 years out. Is that too harsh, about right, or a little too kind? I mean, you could argue that it's too kind.
To me, it's all actually, the ranking hinges on how long is Kobe going to play? And during that period, how is he going to go about recruiting potential free agents, dealing with teammates, and lording the influence that he has over his team? And this is something you and I talked about recently, something I actually wrote about a few weeks ago in regards to an ESPN 5-on-5 where everybody involved, when asked if LeBron James would join the Lakers, all said no.
No.
And 4 out of 5 dentists involved did not recommend Kobe as a recruiting force. They said specifically Kobe would be a reason LeBron wouldn't be there. And I hate to say it, but I actually agree strongly.
You don't really hate to say it. You've said it like 8,000 times.
No, I do.
You don't hate to say it.
No, I do hate to say it. It pains me every single time because I love the Lakers. So I actually do hate to say it, Brian. And to me, that's the million-dollar question. If Kobe keeps approaching things the way he, by all accounts, went about this with Dwight Howard, then 21st might actually be generous because I could see them making absolutely no traction, you know, in terms of anything that you would look at as a permanent fixture in rebuilding. I could actually see them making no progress. If Kobe adjusts his stance, then 21st may be too low. I think a lot of it really rides on Kobe.
The issue of player personnel, Andy, is obviously a huge one. They don't have anyone under contract after this year. I mean, there's like two guys, you know, Steve Nash can be stretched out and they can get rid of him. And, you know, the other guys basically don't cost anything. You know, you have to figure out what you do with Powell. You have to figure out what you do with Kobe. Those are obviously big issues that have cap holds and implications for what, you know, what the roster is going to look like going forward. If you sign Kobe to a reasonable number, if Powell comes back and plays well and you say, you know what, he's worth another couple years at a very reasonable number, you still, and this is where I think this ranking is fair, Andy, is that the biggest problem that they have is a lack of access to younger talent. Carmelo Anthony's a great player. Not who I necessarily want them to go get, but he's obviously a great player. There's no question. But you're going to have to pay into his 30s, well into his 30s, to get somebody like that. We talked earlier, the Paul Georges, guys like that, they're not going to be available. Maybe in a couple years you might, if you're patient, you manage your cap well, you might have space for Kevin Love, people like
LaMarcus,
that.
LaMarcus Aldridge.
People like that,
Rondo.
Sure. But they don't have draft picks. They have you know, they have one this year. They don't have one next year, you know, and they're just, it's going to be hard for them to rebuild in a kind of a traditional way. They have very little access to good young talent. All right, Andy, those questions are literally questions of the future. But what we have, Andy, those are questions of the future. We have important questions of the present that we will answer right now in America's favorite podcast segment, a little something we call ACK.
ACK.
Ask a Kamenetsky. Cue up the music. Andy, first question.
Well, the first one, actually, and it comes from our friend Dexter Fishmore, who's part of the Silver Screen and Roll family, a great Laker blog, SB Nation, was not actually an ACK.
But such a good question.
Exactly. He put it out to his tweeps, and we decided it was so good, we are going to treat it as an ACK.
We're ACKing it.
Exactly. We are hacking his ACK. What DVD would you want with you if you were on the run from the law and hiding in a remote New Hampshire cabin? Obviously a reference to the second to last episode of Breaking Bad.
Spoiler alert!
Yeah, you know what? At this point...
No, shut up. If you're not keeping up, it's your own fault.
Pause, skip ahead, whatever. Not worried about it.
This is an interesting question, Andy, because it's not necessarily the best movie. It's got to be the most watchable movie. Schindler's List is a great movie. Is that really what you want to be watching during the winter in a remote New Hampshire cabin? I don't think so.
No, you do want, I think, a movie that you consider among the all-time greats because you're going to be watching it over and over. You know, all-time great, however you define it. But you're right. There are tonal issues that need to be in place in order for this to work. You have one DVD, and for those who did not see the episode, your TV does not get any reception. Right. So this one
Bryan
DVD...
Bryan Cranston, of course, was left with Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium among his choices.
And that was not actually his choice at all.
Two copies of it, which is a great little touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant performance by Robert Forster.
I thought about this, and there are a lot of ways to go, because they're really super watchable movies like Catch Me If You Can, which every time it's on, you watch. Or Shawshank Redemption, which actually wouldn't be a terrible thing when you're trapped in a cabin to feel like you might be able to escape. You can always watch it when it's on. I'm going to go with Goodfellas, though, because I think it's got a great combination of one of your all-time greats. It's got some great humor, good music, so you're kind of killing two birds with one stone. And, you know, nobody ever gets sick of Goodfellas.
No.
Like, you can't get sick of Goodfellas. You might one day say, gosh, I wish I could watch a different movie just because you only have one DVD. But you're always going to like watching Goodfellas.
Brian, I want you to look at this sheet right now. Tell me what I have in the upper right-hand corner. What movie do I have listed?
Goodfellas.
And for all the reasons you brought up, soundtrack, it's funny in parts, it's dramatic, it's long enough to kill time, but it's not over long that you're like, hurry up, hurry up. You find new things in it. And it's actually practical because at the end, it provides advice on how to start a new life, which is exactly what you would be doing on the land.
On the run, exactly.
So it's Goodfellas. This is among the few times we've been asked, I think, for ACK to come up with something off the top of our head, you know, and we came up with the exact same thing.
Spartantown, at Spartantown, continue with the Breaking Bad theme, asks us, how will you fill that hole left behind by Breaking Bad once it's over? Of course, this Sunday is the finale. Series finale, not just the season finale.
Yeah, there's first of all a lot of pressure on Walking Dead right now. I think for fans,
because that's what's literally going to fill the hole.
Right. I think for a lot of TV watchers, you know, fans of Breaking Bad are also fans of The Walking Dead. So there's a lot of pressure for them to, you know, fill some pretty big shoes. But there's also a lot of pressure on Walking Dead for AMC because outside of Mad Men, The Walking Dead is going to be asked to carry that network for a while. And I got to be honest, I thought last season was good, but a little spotty. I was not a huge fan of the Governor storyline, even though I know it's taken from the graphic novel. I don't think it was always executed that well. So a lot of pressure on that. I have lately, Brian, been binge-watching Sons of Anarchy on Netflix. I think it's good. It's not like quite as good as Breaking Bad or The Shield or, you know, The Wire, Homicide.
People like it.
Oh, but it's very good. It's very well acted, except for that woman who plays Agent Stahl. She's horrible. I also think Louie is a very good show to help fill that void because it's got great drama and great comedy, and it's like Breaking Bad. It's very different than anything that's really on television at all. It's an absolutely brilliant show. And I'm curious to see where Orange is the New Black goes.
Final question, Andy.
From GR8WHT Hype 23, Great White Hype 23, Cam Brothers, Which Manning brother's uglier?
I love this question because it supposes the automatic supposition, the foundation of the question is both Manning brothers are ugly.
Right.
Like, it is a given.
Right. That we wouldn't disagree with the idea that either Peyton or Eli
I think Eli is a little uglier. Eli is one of those kids, Eli makes Eli face more often, like bad things happen to Eli, I think, more often than Peyton. Maybe this
He's
is
a
why.
Little more hangdog.
Right. Eli's face does stranger things than Peyton's.
I'm going to take my wife's word for this, which would mean that I agree with you that it's Eli. My wife's nickname for Eli is the mouth breather. She Man. Thinks that he looks like a mouth breather. It could be because she's a Dallas Cowboys diehard, meaning she roots against all the other NFC East teams, so she hates the Giants, hates Eli Manning, but she does refer to him as that mouth breather. Not a compliment.
When in doubt, always agree with your wife. All right, so that is ACK for this week. Thank you so much for sending in your questions. A lot of people, by the way, sent in questions about Jim and Jeannie Buss and things like that, which we kind of dealt with
Asked
earlier
and
in the
answered.
Show. So please don't...
ACK and answered.
I see what you did there. Please don't feel like your ACK was not taken into consideration because we kind of talked
but
about
do,
it.
But do, though, feel like you have to do better.
I agree. Homework. Really is what that amounts to. This week for
Dazzle us.
Our recommendations this week, it's pretty simple. Sunday night, you watch the Breaking Bad finale. And if you haven't been keeping up, AMC is offering the opportunity to catch up. I believe they're going to run in sequence every episode from all six or is it eight seasons? I forget. I think.
I think it's like... It's considered five seasons, but it's really six.
Whatever it is, from the beginning to the end, they're going to run them all in a marathon.
Right.
So you just call in sick, and you can catch up or do it on Netflix. My way is more fun.
And then the recommended reading is the day after, go to great sites like Grantland or Entertainment Weekly.
HitFix,
Alan Siepenwald. They've all been doing fantastic breakdowns and analysis of the show, recaps. All those guys, Andy Greenwald with Grantland, and I don't remember who's doing them for Entertainment Weekly, but
that doesn't matter.
Outstanding.
But the
Slate, they've all done
this
really
is one
good
of, this
work.
This is one of those moments in television that everyone is going to be talking about. And mm-hmm. why this is so even if you haven't watched the show, watch this so you can at least be part of the conversation on Monday when you go to the office because everyone else is going to be talking about
otherwise
this.
You're going to look like a mouth breather like Eli.
Exactly. Nobody wants that. We will be back next week after Media Day has started. It's possible we could be back earlier this week if Mitch Kupchak says something really important on Wednesday.
Really pissed off at Jeannie Buss. Yeah, this is the worst thing. I think I might cut Kobe. Pau Gasol, I don't like Spaniards.
Something like that. Then we'll re-record. But more likely we'll be back after Media Day when the season kicks off. And until then, thanks for listening.